are now listening to the Good Morning Show on WBOK 1230 AM.
We're back. Welcome back to the Good Morning Show. Out of O.T. Thomas, we want to thank Dwayne Bernal, man, for dedicating his life and his voice to this conversation on cancer diversity. That's tomorrow, June the 21st, 1427 O.C. Haley, 2 o'clock p.m., man. Let's go out there and talk to the brother, man. Let's share all of our stories. It'll be a conversation about how to live. And kind of remind us of Dr. Griggs, get checked, get fit, get moving. Talking about get checked, get fit, get moving, we got a whole lot happening in the system. Stories from the system, the great Eve Abrams and Mr. Danny Engelberg here. I'm going to start ladies first, Danny, if you don't mind.
Yes, that's
Eve, I know we have a little, I don't want to say a promo, but we have, I think, about a 10-minute?
A 10-minute episode,
a 10-minute episode that we want to actually, before we start this conversation, about a very important issue. So why don't you set it up?
Yeah. So this was the third episode of Unprisoned that aired. It's about municipal court, and it kind of gets into how this idea of innocent until proven guilty is actually the opposite. It's more like guilty till proven innocent.
Well, let me say this. If you're African-American and man in New Orleans, we already know that.
Yeah. Well, Reuben Cain, the character in this story is an African-American, you know, New Orleanian.
You know, in our community, guilty until proven innocent until proven guilty. We don't know what that is. But anyway, are you ready to start the...
Yeah. So this is Ruben's story, and it also gets into a lot about bond issues. Mm-hmm. And when I was working on the episode, I called Danny many times to ask him to help me understand. So that's why I asked Danny to come in today.
Let's cue it up.
The way our criminal justice system works, there's a significant cost to just being accused of a crime. Innocent or not, one way or another, you still have to pay, especially if you have a past. This is Unprisoned. I'm Eve Abrams. This is a story about a guy named Reuben Cain. He's 40 and owns a car wash in Treme. He's got kids.
I got one more newborn. My son Harley, beautiful.
Do you have any pictures?
No, it's in the truck. I keep him on the dashboard. I lose my wallet too much.
Reuben Cain's truck was parked near where we sat, outside municipal court. In fact, Mr. Cain had just left the courtroom, relieved, his case finally dismissed. He explained how it all began, one night, over 4 months ago.
Me and my girlfriend had an argument. She went to check her purse and thought she was missing some items.
The items were jewelry, and Mr. Cain was charged with simple robbery. But once he was in jail, Cain's girlfriend, Raquel Dawson, told me she found the jewelry. She said she went to both the DA and the court to let them know nothing had been stolen. She even wore the jewelry to show them.
She came down here to the court building to let the people know that she found the items, that I did not take anything. They made her sign an affidavit, and once she signed the affidavit, the court still locked me up. They refused to hear it. They still locked me up, made me pay another bond. I had to pay two bonds.
For defendants like Reuben Cain, who face low-level, nonviolent charges, bail bonds are supposed to be an exception. The U.S. Supreme Court has held that financial bail can only be imposed to ensure that a defendant like Cain makes it to court. The money is essentially a promise to return. But in New Orleans, bail bonds are the norm. Once you get arrested in Orleans Parish, in order to be released, more often than not, you have to pay bail through a bail bondsman. So in New Orleans, bail bonds have become a kind of escape hatch, a way to get out of jail until trial, if you can afford it. Reuben Cain could. He paid his $5,500 bond through a bail bondsman, and 18 hours later, he was out of jail. The next day, he went back to court to clear everything up. But when he did, the district attorney prosecuting Cain's case motioned to increase his bond by $5,000, and the judge agreed. So Reuben Cain was taken back into custody. Remanded is the legal word. This is not uncommon. In Cain's case, raising his bond likely had something to do with his past. Cain has a long rap sheet from his earlier years, a lot of it drug-related charges from the world he was hanging in, as he raised himself on the streets, he says. But around the time he turned 30, Cain decided to turn his life around. He wanted a better situation for himself and for his kids. Back to the bond story. Cain's mom's auntie went back to the bail bondsman, paying him $750, 15% of the new $5,000 bond. This is typical. 13 to 15% of the total financial bond is the cash amount people pay bail bondsmen in Louisiana. Kane's bail bondsman paid the court his full $5,000 bond, and after the paperwork was done, Reuben Kane was finally free. As for the $750, money Mr. Kane's family will never see again, that's money he says he
didn't have, and I explained it to him that this did not happen. They straight ignored it.
Remember, this is after Mr. Kane's girlfriend wore the jewelry to court she'd accused him of stealing and then found that very night. This so-called theft is what his family paid two bonds to deal with. And it was probably worth it. If Mr. Kane hadn't paid the bond to get out of jail, he'd likely still be sitting there. First, he would have waited for the district attorney to decide whether or not to press charges. For most felony charges, the DA has 60 days to make this decision. In 2015, on average, they took 39 days. If the DA had pressed charges, then finally, Mr. Kane would have been able to say, I'm innocent, or I'm guilty. If he pled innocent and didn't pay the bond, he would have sat in jail until his court date, which typically takes at least a year. So altogether, that would be 14 months away from his family, his seven kids, including his new baby boy, 14 months away from his job, 14 months his family would have to do without the money he earns at that job. So he paid the bond.
After I bonded out, they dropped the charges the next day and sent me over here.
Over here is municipal court. After Reuben Kane bonded out, the district attorney reviewed his case and changed the charge from simple robbery to theft. So 4 months later, he took off work, missed picking up his kids from school, and waited for close to 3 hours for his name to be called. It took the judge about 10 minutes of questioning and listening to dismiss the charge.
A criminal court had this case at first. They didn't want to prosecute it. But I feel if you don't want to prosecute it, why try and send it over here to get just to catch, see if he'll slip or see if you can get him. I can't get him, but see if y'all can get him. You know, if it's a waste of time, it's a waste of time.
Can you estimate how much money you lost by being locked up mm-hmm. and then also by being here today?
Being locked up, the whole ordeal, it's in a couple of thousands. I'd give it a couple of thousands. Because I had this is my third time at court. I missed work. I was in jail twice. One, two. It's a couple of thousand, two, three, something like that. And that's not even including a bond. You know what I mean?
Approximately 300 people pass through the municipal court each day to deal with a legal entanglement. Reuben Kane was just one of them on one afternoon. His case, like every case, is unique. But the way it dragged on and on is not unusual. Mostly, Reuben Kane considers himself lucky. He's back at work, and he and his girlfriend are back together raising their son. But Kane's left with a feeling about the criminal justice system that a lot of people have, that it's designed to hurt people, not protect them.
You know, they feel everybody locked to those doors is a criminal. They don't give you the benefit of the doubt. It's guilty to proving it. You have to prove yourself innocent, and that shouldn't be the case.
Unprisoned is brought to you by WWNO and Finding America, produced by the Association of Independence and Radio, with financial support from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Unprisoned's theme music is by Greg Schatz. Our editor is Vicki Merrick. Learn more about Unprisoned at WWNO.org and Facebook.com/Unprisoned. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. I'm Eve Abrams. This is Unprisoned.
Wow, very powerful story, Eve and Danny. Danny, unfortunately, that story is kind of typical, to be honest with you.
It is.
I know friends, family members, people who share Reuben Kane's story, who were actually innocent, who even had family members and friends go down and say, hey, man, no, they didn't do it, mm-hmm. and the system didn't care.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that is so profound and what gets so many, you know, of our friends and neighbors in this situation is this feeling of being trapped and feeling of even not having the $100 to get out of jail while you're pretrial and to be able to fight the charge. And so much of it starts with people taking that first, second, third charge simply just to get out, simply just for their pretrial liberty.
That's right.
Because they don't have – because basically – and you wonder why people – the jails are filled with mostly poor people, right? It's because the folks who build up those rap sheets are the folks who can't afford to get out and fight their charge, and that we do have a system that is starts with – the first thing that it starts with is money. And if you have the means to get out, I mean, I've dealt with thousands of clients.
You can be OJ.
Well, your case goes so different if you're in or out of jail, right? And so we have so many folks who are, you know, considered low, quote unquote, low risk, you know, not a risk to, you know, they're not leaving New Orleans. They're not. There's not a risk to the community, but the what's just holding them in jail, and why many folks take a conviction, regardless of what. Happened and why they were arrested is just for money and to get out.
Even this is actually part of a much larger story. First of all, powerful testimony there. Thank you. I think this is a must see. Unprisoned story.
Must listen.
Unprisoned. I can't wait for the documentary though. stories from I want to play a role. Stories from the system. But you know, I'm led to think about the Justice Department report on Ferguson when Eric Holder. In their study, which basically showed how fines and fees, petty offenses, minor felonies, are actually used as population control, actually used to further impoverish an entire community. Same story here.
Yeah. Oh, I think it was Danny who said to me, we could be Ferguson in an interview. Yeah. And I know Chief the Chief Public Defender, Derwin Button, has said as much. We could be Ferguson. Absolutely. Yeah. And I that's what I was trying to capture here is... I mean, municipal court, for those of you who have never been there, just go and sit there. It's really eye-opening. It's remarkable. I mean, there are just hundreds of people going in and out every day, and you sit in the courtroom, and it's very clear to see who is being criminalized in our city.
504-2609-265. Please call and weigh in. A very important discussion about accountability and freedom, transparency, honesty, corruption, all of those things in the criminal justice system. Eve Abrams and Danny Engelberg, Unprisoned, stories from the system. Danny, you said something that you touched on it in your conversation about just the inability or the ability to pay the bond. Mm-hmm. It is a lot easier for someone to defend themselves if they can afford to be released, to gather information, get their family together, get that support. But for those people, whether they're innocent or not, If they can't come up with it, with this minimal bail to be free, most of them are cooked.
Yeah, the assistance that our clients can provide us in defending themselves is so much greater if they're out of jail. And as you said, with just we're strapped, and so many of our clients have to help us with their own investigation and assistance with just getting ready for the case. But you know, frankly, what mostly happens is. You're sitting in jail, and you give an offer. I'll give you probation. You can get out today. No matter innocent, guilty, in between, everyone. It's a rare person that says, "No, I'll sit here for another month or two or three or four in jail, despite me being innocent or despite my I have this good case, just to fight the charge." No, I'm going to take that probation, which comes with hundreds of dollars of fines, which comes with often bad things happening down the line because of that probation. But I'm going to take that today because my interest today is just to get out of, the Orleans Parish prison. And, who wouldn't make that decision, right? And it's a completely rational decision, but that starts that first conviction, which then leads to the next time if you get arrested, your stakes are so much higher, because of your three strikes, you're outlawed, because these are the repeat. Even misdemeanors can get enhanced, and so the stakes are so much higher, and it just keeps building on itself.
Go ahead, Eve.
Well, I was going to say, Danny, don't you then also look like, you're a criminal, you have a rap sheet, and so your every subsequent case is harder and harder to defend because you start being profiled, actually.
It starts with the interaction with the police. Yeah, they certainly, every time you make a stop, they'll look at your record. right? They can pull that up in a second, right? And then it does lead to the, we have this multiple offender law, which affects not only what I think most people think in their mind, violent offenses. No, it affects every offense down the line. That even on if you get picked up and you happen to have some drugs on you, you're looking, if you've been through the system a few times and perhaps, you get these convictions because you're too poor to bond out or because of X, Y, or Z, you're looking at serious time. You're looking at 20 years to life on a nonviolent conviction.
If the legislature wanted to find some money, these guys have just painted a picture where they could find a whole lot of, a few hundreds of millions of unnecessary dollars that are spent.
Yeah, I mean, if you just took this multiple offender law off the books for nonviolent offenses, right, the savings would be astronomical.
Hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm kind of walking in your conversation. It's really so on point, especially with the most incarcerated place per capita in the world, right here in Louisiana. And based on this story, and what Danny just said, is that most of it is foolishness. It's minor unnecessary accounts that have caused us to be the most incarcerated place per capita in the world.
Yeah, I think so. It's inexplicable. I've been trying to understand why we're in this situation. I mean, I think it is a matrix of laws and practices and really deeply entrenched racism.
I want to get to the public defender's office at some point because I think it's important. We need to understand its relationship in a civil society. But, Danny, talk about being transferred from criminal court. Mm-hmm. We couldn't get you there. So now, guys, if y'all are listening out there, this is insane. It is the definition of insanity. We couldn't get you there. You proved you're innocent. Your girlfriend proved you're innocent. But we're going to transfer you. We'll shuffle you over to municipal court. That's unbelievable.
Well, you see it going both ways. Folks that are in one court get brought to the other, and
especially if they can pay.
Right. But sometimes those decisions are made based on their assessment of the case, and there's nothing wrong with that. But what is, I think, at least that story tells a story of is why there's a new bond obligation. Why there's bond at all. For someone who, is clearly coming back to court.
And he already had a bond.
Yeah, and he already had a bond. Even in the first place, what is the bond doing? He's coming back to court. He's got a job. There's not really a risk of flight. There's not a risk of community. It's a relationship squabble that got cleared up.
Right.
Let it play out in court, but without the money obligation. I mean, that's what makes sense to me.
Wow, the lines are let up. I'm so proud of our listening audience because this is an important conversation. You got want to change New Orleans, guys? Change this one. Line two. Old Yeller, you're on with our panel.
Man, well, this is a good show, Oliver, because
thank you.
I got somebody, everybody in this annoyance got somebody caught up in this jail system.
Yes.
I'll be brief. I know the lines are lit up. My little cousin called up the state attorney. And the person that called up the state attorney said that my cousin had an aggravated assault charge.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no witnesses, no nothing, or anything. Just made the phone call. And when they were located at the French Quarter, there was nothing on the camera. And they put out a bench warrant from. And here's the hook. He's caught up in a court system from aggravated assault, and he's trying to work it down a misdemeanor.
Wow.
I want to ask your guest, is this OT?
Yeah.
It was attempted murder at first.
What?
And what I'm saying is, if someone could make a phone call,
right,
if they're mad, I'm mad at you, OT.
Right.
And I'm going to call them people on you and say, OT tried to shoot me.
Mm-hmm.
And then they run with that. They knock on your door. I'll get you caught up in litigation in the court system, and then you got to prove your innocence, even though there was no witnesses, no nothing. Is that a new trend that's gone on to your
Danny Eves,
a lot of that going on.
Danny,
well, I would say it's a new trend. I mean, you can get charged in so many different ways, and that is one of the reasons why the presumption of innocence is so important, because that case or any case like that can play out in any number of ways, right? It could have a basis, it could not have a basis, but to be able to have to be incarcerated and be forced to
if you'd like to make a call
defend yourself based on just a one call. Right. Let it play out if it's going to play out, but not with someone basically being coerced or being to either take a plea because of their current incarceration or being unable to help defend themselves. So I really do think that, you know, Brian Stevenson, who is a hero of mine, talks about how that we've switched out what is a presumption of innocence to a presumption of dangerousness and a presumption of guilt.
I'm going to get the plea at some point. I think Mumia Abu-Jabbar's book, Jailhouse Lawyer, and The Danger of Pleas Today, describes just what's happening with that. And people are being forced to take pleas who believe in, who are innocent. Line three, Brother Shedrick, you're on with our panel.
Hey, good morning. I wonder if people truly know. You know, a lot of people that have not been involved with the criminal justice system, all they look at is people did this and they deserve what they get. Mm-hmm. But until you are involved in it, you really don't know how unfair it is. And about 4 or 5 years ago, I did something silly as a 40-year-old man, black man at the time. I'm 40, about to be 44 now. And until I got into the situation, I did not see how serious it can be, how many people were copping to pleas because they could not afford attorneys. And if my family wasn't vigilant by putting up a property, I probably could have been charged with a felony. Now, this is my first time in a criminal problem, and all the district attorney and his minions knew was felony, felony, felony. And it wasn't no murder charge or anything, you know, or no rape charge or no child kind of charge or nothing like that. So pretty much, if I didn't have a job or didn't have family, I could have ended up with a felony. You know, so I don't know if people know how serious of lack that poor, you know, the system. If you don't have money, the system lacks representation for poor people.
Thank you. I think, Eve and Danny, I think that's what you guys are saying. And this series is important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, Reuben Cain is not a rich man. You know, his family was able to cobble together mm-hmm. this bond, which, as Danny pointed out, shouldn't have even been necessary in the first place. But absolutely, I think it is it seems like it's a way to create revenue to perpetuate the system. So the system is paid for by the people who are churned through it. So the larger the system gets, the more people it needs to.
But it further impoverishes and oppresses communities that can't afford it.
Absolutely, because if you're locked up, you're not going to work. You're destabilizing your family. They're not enjoying that income that you have. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I wrote something else down. I want to go back to this piece on pleas. I read a couple of good books, Tyranny of Good Intentions, an excellent book. It talks about, one of the writers was Ronald Reagan's attorney, the other was a professor of ethics at Villanova. They talk about the danger in the criminal justice system now, and that if it continues going in the direction that it's in, it's Soviet gulags and Nazi concentration camps. These intellectuals actually basically say that a system that's gone from a few felonies to over several thousand felonies now are even jeopardizing our democracy, Danny?
Well, I mean, you can just look at just one subset of laws, which is creating mm-hmm. the mass incarceration. Why a simple possession of narcotics is mm-hmm. a felony makes no sense, mm-hmm. makes absolutely no sense, which in many states it's considered a misdemeanor, right? Which is which a court can then deal with in a public health way rather than with these massive, often bond obligations to even get out, and then massive sentences that will result from a conviction. So I do think that, just look at the size of the jail. I mean, we've made a lot of progress, and a lot of people put in a lot of work to make the progress. So it's over 60% decrease in our local jail population, which is a big step. Yeah. But there's still a long way to go.
In a little city our size, I tell people we should have had a jail instead of prison, and we shouldn't have had a prison or a jail that big. When we come back, we're going to continue this discussion with Eve Abrams, the writer, producer, documentarian, and this is Danny Engelberg, head of trials at the Orleans Parish Public Defender's Office. So we'll talk about some more stories. We'll also talk about some solutions and why the public needs to be engaged after the break.
Can we talk? You are now listening to the radio station that's keeping it real. WBOK 1230 AM, where it's real talk for real time.
Listening to the Good Morning Show on WBOK 1230 AM.
We're back. Welcome back to the Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas. We talk about important discussions. We've had some of those important discussions in our community. Conversations on Cancer and Diversity with Mr. Bernard, live and in color. June 21st, tomorrow at 1427 O.C. Haley. Be there for 2 o'clock to talk about cancer, a conversation on cancer and diversity in our community. And right now, one of the most important discussions that we can have with each other and with the entire community. We're talking to Eve Abrams, a producer, writer, documentarian, educator, and Mr. Danny Engelberg, man, one of our angels, and head of trials over at the Orleans Parish Defender's Office. We can go to the lines and lit up before we get back to the discussion, Eve. Line two, Ms. Eloise, you're on with Eve and Danny.
Good morning. My question to you, a public defender, I've been to your office just about my grandson is locked down there, but they don't have a victim or him being a perpetrator on anybody, but they're holding him because somebody put his name on Facebook and stole his ID and put his name on Facebook, so we never had no visitor to police come knocking at the door looking for him. So who is this? Who's supposed to be the victim and he's supposed to be the attack? No investigation, and I've been to public service, public defense, because, you know, I'm a multiple victim. I constantly ask questions, and I constantly go into these offices. I need to know, you know, why you all are holding these young men, shipping these young men from one part of the city to the other part, to one part of the state to the other. And that's just to deter them being set free without any
mindset
for them?
Yeah, it's very hard to hear you, Ms. Eloise. There's a high pitch, a squeak in every other word. But we're going to ask this guy. I think that's what you guys are challenging. The system is basically the concerns that Ms. Eloise has.
Right. I mean, it sounds like I can't tell about that specific situation, but a lot of the frustration is pretrial incarceration, you know, not being innocent until proven guilty, that not being able to have his day in court without being incarcerated and all the effects that has, even if you are innocent. A lot of the studies are showing that even a small amount of incarceration can really affect a person's life.
Right.
So that you're actually not making this city safer and a better place by pretrial incarceration, that you're actually making it more dangerous, because not only is someone's life falling apart, but even a 5, 6, 7 day stint in jail has bad effects down the line.
5, 6 to 7 day. Eve, I have a friend that we talked to, whose son has been in prison on a capital defense, so I think for maybe 3.5 or 4 years. They have not been formally charged yet, but they cannot afford. They can't afford, because it's a capital offense, family can't come out with money to release them. That's crazy. Now, and the DA hasn't charged them yet, but they're there, still there. They're still in prison years later.
Without being charged?
My understanding is that they haven't gone to trial yet.
Oh, okay.
They haven't gone to trial yet.
Right.
They're still there. They profess they're innocent, but they're still, but they haven't gotten a strong enough case to go to trial yet, and they're still in prison.
Wow.
Well, I mean,
Danny.
There's a lot of.
And I say that because some people say there should be a cap on how long they should hold you.
Right. So, I think every case is its own case. And so some cases take a long time.
Right.
And sometimes that's a choice that the defense
makes
to try to get more time to defend themselves.
Right.
You know, one of the things that we are often coming up against is the need for time just to get ready for trial, because our lawyers.
Y'all are dealing with 200 caseload.
More than 2 or 3 times national standards for representation, a completely depleted investigative staff. We have probably both hands behind our back at this point. And so, I don't know about this person's situation, but sometimes we just, in order to give the person the defense they deserve and they need, we need the the extra time or the extra resource to be able to do that. So that, you know, so there is some fault on our side sometimes for delay, but often that's because, you know, we just don't have the capabilities to get ready for that case.
Well, I'm going to go back to the lines.
Well, I was going to say there is a time limit that somebody can stay in jail before they've been charged, which I talked about in this story. So 60 days for some cases and 90 for others, I believe.
Okay.
I can't remember the specifics of what kind of charge. But so it's not that you can be held there indefinitely before being charged, but it could be months.
Right. We're going to go to lines right now. Line 3, Mr. Lawrence, you're on with Danny and Eve.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a son who has a drug charge. He was actually sentenced to 6 years. When the DOC got his paperwork, it said 12 years. I went to the judge, went to talk to the district attorney, public defender, I'm sorry, who represented him. Paperwork was drawn up. They went back to look at the minutes and all. 6 years was all it's supposed to get. He's sitting in jail now. The paperwork still says 12 years. I was told that I had to contact the public defender's office. There's a young man who draws up the paperwork. It's been over a year and 4 months now. I have not heard anything. I've been to the public defender's office quite a few times, and nothing's actually happening. In the meantime, my son is sitting in jail thinking he has 12 years when he actually has 6 when the judge said, this is all wrong. This needs to be corrected. It's not correct. And so who do I actually talk to or go to actually have this change for him? He's written letters himself, and things have not changed.
Thank you, Mr. Lawrence.
If you want, I can get the name off
absolutely.
The air, and
absolutely.
I can follow up with you and call you after the show, because that is something that we can assist both you and your son on.
You want to share the name, Mr. Lawrence, with Danny?
I'm sorry?
You want to share the name? He says if you give the information when he gets back to his office, he'll call you to try to help.
I'll give him his name. Will we do this off the air?
I'll tell you what. We'll have our producer take the information. I'll put you on hold. Have our producer take the information, and then you can share it with Ms. Engelberg.
I appreciate that.
Thank you, sir.
Line 504-260-9255. 6-5, we're having a candid conversation about unprisoned stories from the system. As you guys can see, the lines are lit up. It seems to be the topic in New Orleans. Danny, something you live every day.
Mm-hmm. No, it affects so many people. And, you know, with a city this size, to have even a 60% reduced jail size from 2005 is still, it's a tremendous size. You know, still having between 1 and 2,000 people in jail every day for a city this size makes no sense.
City with 380,000 people. Eva, let's get back to the bond issue.
The
person had a bond.
Yes.
Yeah, family's got to come up with 13 to 15% of it.
Correct.
They satisfy that, then they put another bond on it.
Yeah.
How is that legal?
Right. I had the same question. And Ruben didn't understand what happened. I didn't understand what happened. And actually, when I called Danny and he went through his docket and looked at what had been written and was able to surmise that he came to court of his own free will, you know, woke up in his own house, came into court to deal with his issue, and was remanded. So what they did is they decided this guy's got this long rap sheet. We're not going to let him go. We want him. So we're going to raise his bond. So he's already made his initial bond.
But Eve, backpedal with me.
Yeah.
You just said something that was really, really... I think it kind of sums up the system. It's extremely frightening, though. He's got a bad record.
Yeah.
No matter what he is now.
Right.
We want him. You believe the system actually operates like that?
I think it does. And it's not. It's complicated. You know, I've tried to look at it from both perspectives.
You've tried to be objective.
I have.
You can't be.
Well, when I look at it from the DA's perspective, you know, they don't know this individual. They don't make the time necessarily to go and speak to him. I think they're looking at this record and they think, well, we've got a career criminal here and this person is a danger and this person probably did it. Or if they didn't do this, they did something else.
And they probably can't go speak to him.
They can't.
You know, they have to go through his attorney once you get charged. But the first thing someone ever looks at when you get arrested is your rap sheet. And so, and everything is determined on your prior contact with the system.
Your resume.
Yeah, you're basically, and that is what connects this issue to the issue of money and bail and bonds, because that first, second, third charge is often just taken, or the type of charge you get is because you can't afford your bond and you can't get out of jail. And so you take the charge, you take the plea just to get out of jail. We have so many people who get probation after sitting in jail for 30, 60, 90 days waiting to get to court. Well, if you're not a risk to the community to be released on probation, why are you a risk to be held pretrial and be held on a bail or bond just because you're too poor to pay?
Well, lines are lit up, man. I want to thank our listening audience. This is an extremely important discussion about how we've lived, about how we live, and deciding how we're going to live in terms of challenging this criminal injustice system.
Yeah, I think also what's interesting is with every caller, every situation is complicated, right? There's no simple situation. And then who are the people who are supposed to unravel this? We've got an extremely overtaxed public defender's office who defend 85% of the people that go through the courts in New Orleans.
That's my next question after these callers are on it, though. Line 2, Reverend Littleton, you're on with Danny Engelberg and Eve Abrams.
A pleasure. Good morning, my son.
Good morning. God bless you, young man.
Good morning to all of you. Why, instead of lock them up and throw away the keys, why do people cannot work in the communities, cleaning it up, doing things that make the city look better or make your communities look better? Why this cannot happen?
Thank you. We'll ask that question. Now, work release. Right. I think that's probably a question for the sheriff and the mayor. And those people, I think you're absolutely, if they're being held, let them go to work, you know, let them go to the jobs.
Well, we do have a work release program, and it is legislated by our state legislature that the sheriff gets 62% of the wages of the people who are in the work release program.
It's a slave release.
Exactly. Again, it's a funding stream.
Wow. First time caller, Daniel, you're on with Danny Engelberg and Eve Abrams. Man, talk to me, man.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Danny.
Hi.
I think you know me.
Danny.
This is no doubt an issue that a lot of people in New Orleans are upset about and something that's happening around the country.
Yes.
Can you talk to your listeners about what individuals in New Orleans can do if they're upset about this issue? What solutions can be entered into by just, you know, ordinary people who are appalled at this situation?
Thank you, Daniel. We'll appreciate that. Solutions. What can we do? You see the call. You see the lines are on fire. It touches all of our families, but it's still happening. What can we do?
Well, I think, you know, it starts with, I hate to be a broken record, but it starts with this issue of reforming how we consider folks once they're charged and whether they're held because they're too poor to pay a bond or a bail. Right. And so what I think a lot of folks are working on this on all parts of the system. So it isn't like no one's paying attention to it. It's just probably very too slow for the problem. But that's solution one, is just support both judges and the mayor's office and the city council in the efforts to say, you know, we're not going to put you on blast if you release someone who, you know, is just on a low-level felony, or if you don't even have a bail or bond obligation for any misdemeanor unless it's a crime of violence. So that's step one, reforming the bail and bonds, releasing anyone who's not, considered a risk, so that they're not taking a charge just because they're too poor to pay and get out of jail. And as I said earlier, but the biggest thing that in my mind that I see every day in our representation of our clients is just how staggering the sentences are that they face. And so reforming our multiple offenders so it doesn't apply to non-violent folks for a huge chunk of the system, that you don't even get those charges out of the multiple offender universe. Those are two real concrete things that we can do, and put pressure on our legislatures to do.
Eve Abrams, before I go back to the line, Tracy Washington and I had a candid conversation with Percy Marchand, young businessman in CESS 504, guy, young producer, cultural activist in our community. And one of the things they shared with us was about New Orleans. When I asked them, what did New Orleans mean to them? I think Percy, who said, you know, New Orleans to me was that they never had enough money to make sure our park was funded like it should be. He said they never had enough money to make sure our school was like it should be. They never had enough money to fix our streets and our community. They never had enough money for after-school programs and training. He said, but every time we made a mistake, they had enough money to punish me or somebody in my family.
Yeah, it's very punitive. I think following where the money goes is a really important step. And I think that, you know, all of these systems are in place because of laws, right? And who makes laws?
The politicians. People that,
exactly.
Legislators.
I mean, it's really boring work to go to community meetings and city council meetings and look into who you're voting for and what their specific votes have been. But I think that's where you make change, is by really carefully considering who you're putting into, you know, into power. And I also think that a lot of people who it's easier to sit in the sidelines, and we need people who are running for office, who are going after these positions, who are thinking about these issues. So I would say get more politically engaged is my answer.
They're tough on crime. Line two, Lando, you're on with Danny Engelberg and Eve Abramson. Talk to me, Lando.
How y'all doing? Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm interested, and this is just my perspective, would like for y'all to comment on it. Basically, I've been doing a little research, and it seems like in most predominantly African-American communities, we have this same problem. In New Orleans, we're, 67, 68% black. And at the end of the day, it seems like we're basically kind of like at the bottom of the barrel. How does this correlate to the people that we're putting in office, and how come in our case, like the criminal code and all of these, you know, rules and regulations that were documented to protect the rights of citizens, how is that being compromised by basically looking at someone's past, documenting that, looking at their past? I mean, somebody might have been a repeat offender at 18, then at 41 they got to go and do 5 years for a nickel bag of weed.
Right. Time's running out, man. Great question. Thank you, Lando, as always. Danny?
Yeah, I mean, it just does. I think one of the things that if we didn't have that three strikes you're out law, the multiple offender law, then yeah, that person with that bag of weed, or
even for minor felonies,
for a low level felony, wouldn't be both pretrial incarcerated and taken away from his job and his family, but also wouldn't be looking at you know, years and years for, you know, it just doesn't compute. It doesn't compute to our clients, even though you know it's been going on for years, and to their families, it just doesn't make any sense. Honestly,
real talk. You know, basically, Lando's the African American community targeted. You mentioned race. Eve. This is an issue about race.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think Michelle Alexander, in her book *The New Jim Crow*, says it really, really well. This is the new Jim Crow. Absolutely.
Well, line three, Tony, you're on with Eve Abrams and Danny Engelberg.
How you doing, brother?
Doing fine, but peace to you, Tony.
I personally know Mr. Kane, and I'm from that area in the Treme, and I've seen, you know, how cops have done. I even had cops plant stuff on me. My first charge, my first arrest was for, you know, something that cops planted on me. Then months later, those same cops stopped and asked me, like, what happened with those charges? And I said, you know, they dropped it. I guess it did. So there wasn't enough charge. And it's crazy how, you know, cops like to, when they want you, you know, they try to cause it to, you know, certain things. You know, we have sex lines. He told me once before, he said, if I see three people hanging out, I have the right to stop you. I've never heard that before in my life.
Thank you, Tony. We keep losing you, man. But thank you. It starts with,
yeah, well, I mean,
we talk about the system, but it starts with law enforcement.
Sure, and one of the things, I don't want to be plugging our own office, but you know, before Katrina, if you got picked up on a low level felony, you wouldn't meet your lawyer till after 2 months, and so you, and sometimes you would just do what they call DA time, and then the DA would and so it's one of the things that our reforms was after, you know, when our new office took over,
was nickname for the kind of time you do
DA time. And you know, sometimes cops would do a bad arrest, you know, not every police officer does that, but you'd see a bad arrest and someone would do DA time, and the DAs would say, well, after 2 months of sitting in jail, I'm going to dismiss or refuse the charge. And we don't see that, because we have, you know, even though we're limping and not fully funded, we represent folks from arrest. And once we're appointed after arrest, you know, were a check on that happening, and that was happening, and that, you know, with a lawyer at your side, that shouldn't happen anymore.
Well, and let's talk about one of the front lines of defense. And I know in reading about history and ancient history, it says you can tell if a society is civilized by how it treats its elderly, mm-hmm. its children, its libraries. And I think we can add to that today in about freedom, Danny, in terms of what we fund. I think it was just a state that just passed something where a percentage goes to the public defender's office. Where are we here right now? In the state that probably should have the best funded public defender's office in the nation, especially because of what we do with the criminal justice system, we have one of the worst.
Yeah, I mean, we've been in what restriction of services for the last year, where we have clients on a wait list who are sitting in jail, and where you know, we just don't have the resources and the capacity that we need. And, you know, instead of, I think we've always been fighting with one hand behind our back, we've been doing with two hands. And so, you know, where we're at is there's been a statewide push for public defense reform.
The next millage needs to have funding for the public defender's office,
right.
we have another one.
You know, we have millages for a lot of other things, like the zoo, but not for basic constitutional rights. So I think, it's about time to do that.
Eve, not enough time. Y'all promised to come back.
Oh, yeah. We'll be back every Monday, 2 weeks on your in the next 2 weeks. 2 weeks from today, we'll be back on your show, and next week in the afternoon.
And how can people get copies of Unprisoned Stories from the System?
You can go to WWNO.org, and there might be a link on WBOK, but there's definitely one on WWNO.org.
And this is OT in the Early Bird. We want to thank everybody. Have a great, safe week. Coming up, we do a good job of waking you up, but the next brother is going to make sure he keeps you conscious. The Conscious Hour with Chuck Perkins, Eve Abramson, Danny Engelberg. Thank you so much. Mr. Don't forget about Conversations on Cancer and Diversity with Dwayne Bernal, 1427 O.C. Haley at 2 o'clock tomorrow. Join the conversation. Guys, I'll talk to y'all tomorrow. O.T. in the Early Bird.